Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
Canadians with criminal records for drug possessions are soon going to see them vanish within a couple of years after the government, its justice reform bill, when it becomes law. And that will affect potentially hundreds of thousands of people. It's estimated that as many as 250,000 Canadians, amazing, may have drug possession convictions stemming from cannabis possession alone when it was illegal. And you'll recall back in about 2019, the government said, we're going to allow you to apply to have that conviction taken off the books. But only a few people took advantage of that one. So now they've decided, we're going to do it for you. We are just going to eliminate that conviction from the books and you will be free and clear. The question is, should we be doing this? I want to bring in Jeff Manishan. He's a criminal lawyer here in town. We always like to talk to him about these kind of issues. Jeff, how are you today?
Yeah, I'm just doing fine, Scott. How about you?
Excellent. Thank you. Excellent. Listen, the question here with this one isn't about whether or not cannabis should be legal or illegal. That's been discussed. People have their opinions. You're entitled. Everyone's entitled to their opinion on that one. The law now says it's not. This is a question, I think, of whether an activity that people knew at the time should not be done should be forgiven. Because when they broke the law at the time, they knowingly broke the law. Now we're going to say, yeah, it doesn't really matter anymore. Is that, should we be doing this? Or if you broke the law, should you be penalized for that still?
Well, let's approach it this way, Scott. And you go back far enough, I'm sure, back in the days when there was something called a pardon.
Yep.
You'll remember that you could apply, if you had a criminal record and a certain period of time passed, you could apply to Ottawa to get a pardon. And the effect of the pardon would be to wipe the record out. Then the Harper government decided they would change it and not only increase the cost of applying for the thing multifold, but also they didn't like the idea of calling it a pardon. They called it a record suspension. And the idea was essentially that your record would be suspended, but obviously could be reinstated if you messed up again. And so that's the idea, is that having a criminal record doesn't have to necessarily be a lifetime thing. Let's start with that. Okay, number one. Number two, one of the reasons for the whole issue of legalizing marijuana was you had people getting criminal records for marijuana, and it was felt that's inconsistent with the morality of the time. We didn't want to criminalize it. So that's number two. A criminal record can be a barrier for a marijuana offense for travel to the United States for an indefinite period. And there are other areas where you can't get a job with any kind of record, and a record under what used to be the Narcotic Control Act, then the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act, a problem. Next point, Scott, here's what's contemplated now. It isn't really saying it, the record doesn't exist. The phrase I read in the article in the Star said they are called, that it's going to be subjected to segregation. So if somebody wants to have a criminal record check run, it won't show up on the criminal record that the person had a finding of guilt for a marijuana offense or for a drug offense, drug possession. So that's the idea, that it's not really wiping the record out so much as it's just retreating it, that record for criminal record purposes won't count.
The reason that I wonder about this, Jeff, is that again, when the law was broken, it was understood that that was the law. And so let me give you an example. The QEW between here and Niagara is now 110 kilometers an hour, but for the longest time it was 100 kilometers an hour.
Yeah.
And so if I got a speeding ticket on that stretch of highway 10 years ago, even though we've decided we don't like the 100 kilometer an hour rule that was there, should I be able to get a refund on the fine I paid and on the insurance premiums that went up? Because we're now saying, by today's standards, that was not right. We would never get that. We would never be able to get away with that.
Scott, you know what you would get? You got points against your license for speeding, and after a certain number of years, those points drop off. That's how it works on the Highway Traffic Act. The points aren't a lifetime thing. After a certain number of years, the points drop off. Sure, we see on your record you had a speeding conviction back 10 years ago and haven't made your convicted speeding again, but the fine you'd get now would be on an automatic calculated fine. But you know what your points would be 10 years later if you had nothing in between, Scott? Nothing. Nothing. You would have no
points.
So we do excuse it, essentially. When we say excuse it, we aren't saying you weren't convicted. What we're saying is you don't have to carry around the baggage of the consequences of that conviction like Marley's ghost. Okay, at a certain stage, we're going to say, look, we're going to allow for the fact of passage of time happened, and so we're going to treat it that you can start from square one. So realize, Scott, they aren't saying that you weren't found guilty back then. It's not too far different from the pardon you could get, but instead of finding out pardons for everybody, which would take forever and expensive and complex, they're saying, look, this whole category, we're going to park these the drug possession records. So somebody can at least go on as if they didn't have a criminal record for a drug offense if they're going to apply for a job. That's what they're meaning to do, because they're going to say that they don't feel that it, they feel it's kind of disproportionate to make you have to be saddled with it indefinitely.
What about other charges, other crimes that have changed, or other criminal descriptions that have changed? Should we be doing the same with those?
They're talking about segregating the drug possession charges. If you had a conviction for break and enter, that's staying. Robbery, that's staying.
That's right. But I'm saying there are some other crimes that we have changed over the years, things that have changed. Should those also be gotten rid of then, or segregated? Should we go through more than just cannabis?
Hey, there were offenses back many years ago. Okay, I think one was gross indecency. And back years ago, back in the 60s, you could have sexual interaction of a certain kind between adults, and if they consented, a lot of the time said no, you know, that was illegal. But should you wipe those out? I bet if somebody wanted to apply for a pardon now, that it'd get wiped out. Would the conviction get expunged? Potentially it could. But realize, Scott, the exercise is not a matter of attempting to rewrite history. We aren't pretending that something that you were found guilty of, you weren't found guilty of. We're just trying to find a way to be able to say, look, we aren't going to visit you with the consequences now. Think of it as a universal, it's not quite right, but a universal blanket way of granting people a pardon for minor offenses, for marijuana or for drug offenses, majority of them are marijuana possession anyway. Somebody's got a $100 fine for a possession of a joint, Scott, from 1990. I would like to be able to apply for a job now. Are you going to say he has to carry that around from 22 years later? Or are we going to say, nah, you know what, the guy doesn't have to have prior to, we're going to get it segregated. He doesn't have to have that burden. That's the spirit of the legislation.
It is an interesting one. And I mean, Jeff, your explanation is excellent. It is an interesting idea. I will be interested to see if there are others that do come along more commonly now. If this one is taken in the spirit with which you describe and people are happy with it, if governments will propose other things for other past crimes or criminal activity that now by today's standard we don't hold as criminal activity, that'll be an interesting one. But Jeff Manishin,
we won't see the floodgates open, I don't think, Scott.
Jeff Manishin, criminal lawyer here in town, always appreciate the time. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, my pleasure, Scott. Good chatting as always.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Because of all the changes in scheduling and everything else, seems like a long time since we've had Don Robertson on the show. It has been a long time. Just doesn't just seem like it. He is back now. The guy who runs Dundas Real McCoy's, ComChoice Realty, the once and future Dundas Citizen of the Year, many other things as well. Don, how are you today?
I'm very well, Scott. How are you?
I could not be better. I mean, you know, everyone's got their things, but I could not be better. Glad to be back and glad that, you know, glad to come back to a little normalcy, sort of.
Yeah. Yes, it's, and you like the heat. You're a heat guy, so you'll be happy.
Oh, love it.
Smoking out there.
I intend to finish the show at some point, go outside, heat up a little, and get in the pool. I have, you know what, Don, because of everything going on, I have not been in the pool yet this summer. Not once. Which is
really
seems like a giant waste. Well, because we were away on vacation and then I was away for work. And before that, it wasn't very warm. And when it was warm, I wasn't around. And so, I'm hoping that tonight will be the night when I get to christen the pool because I've not been in yet. This weekend was the first time I'd sat out in the backyard all summer, which was just bizarre. It's been flying by. I don't know what's going on.
Well, it's only July 4th, but you're clearly working too hard and vacationing too hard. So relax around the house, yeah. No, I'm sitting out back on the back deck, which you've seen, and is very calm. It's a beautiful time of the year. This afternoon, I wandered over to Jaws Mars and picked up some more fresh strawberries and raspberries. I do that about 4 or 5 times a week because they pick them every day. My clients like them. And I just love this time of the year. I'll eat strawberries till I'm sick of them, and I won't need any till next year. And then I'll do the same thing with corn on the cob. And life's a big repetitive cycle for me.
That's okay. You know, every year in about February, I always think of this time of the year and say, anybody who complains to me that it's too hot when we can't step outside without blistering our face with the cold, you know what? I'll take the hot. I'll take the hot every day over the cold, but not everyone agrees, but I will. I'll take this one as much as we can get it. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat now.
Don, I know that before you came on, I heard through the grapevine you were chatting with Ben just before you came on the air, and you guys were talking about the Ticats, and you said there's only one way to describe the Ticats right now, and it's a way that we can't say on the air without me losing a show and you never being allowed back on the radio ever again. But you know, but
Ben,
the amazing
thing, encouraged me to try and tell it the way it is, because he said it loses context if you don't say it the right way.
Yeah, there's a limit to the tell it the way it is.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. So everyone knows the Ticats are 0-4. They look really bad right now. They're doing stupid stuff that's costing them games. They are, you know, they are a bad team. This is a team that lost in overtime in the Grey Cup not that long ago, and now they are arguably the worst team in the league at this moment. I don't think they're really the worst team in the league, but at this moment they are. But you know what, Don? Here's the thing about the CFL that I got to ask you. You're 0-4, and yet in the East, they are 2 points out of first place. And I look at this and I think, I don't know how else you can do it, but it almost makes me think, and I've thought this before in certain years, is the CFL punitive enough for in the standings that if you just are terrible, that you are almost never out of it? And on one hand, somebody might say that's a great thing, that your team is never out of it, no matter what kind of year you've had. But to me, there's got to be some, I don't know, some penalty for being this bad. And there isn't really one.
Well, how many teams in the CFL now?
Nine.
And six get in the playoffs?
Yep.
That tells you all you need to know. In most major league sports, less than half. Use the recently finished Stanley Cup playoffs. They have 16 of 32 get in. So barely half. So when you're going to let an inordinate amount of teams into the playoffs, then you're going to get some bad teams that come into the playoffs. I mean, there's just no other way to get around it. And the people that vote on playoff structure and that type of integrity they're not neutral. I mean, you might be voting yourself out of a home playoff game if you get silly and say, you know, only the top two in the East and the West are going to get in, and we're just going to go to a semifinal and a Grey Cup. You know, you could be voting away a lot of dough. So the people that have a vested interest in perhaps curtailing how many teams get in the playoffs are probably going to shoot themselves in the financial foot, because you know, if you're ever going to draw a good crowd, it'll be a playoff game.
And you're 100% right that the teams are never going to vote for any real change for that very reason. I agree with you 1,000%. But let's ignore that reality for a second and talk about what would be a way. And there's one way, and I know that traditionalists blanch at this. I think it's long past time. With the number of times in recent years that there's been a crossover and the West has been up and down the lineup, the West has been better. To me, it's long past time to have one division in the CFL and top six get in, period, end of story. We're not going to make accommodations for which conference you're in. We're not going to give you a home game just because you happen to be the second best team in the East, even though you are way worse than the team you're hosting. To me, it's only nine teams. Let's have one division. Everybody plays everybody twice, and top six get in. First two get a bye. Next two get a home game. Last two play on the road. And at least then, teams that do what the Ticats are doing, and I'm not rooting for them to lose, Don, but I'm saying there should be a penalty for being this bad. It should hurt you down the road.
Well, they are this bad right now. If they're this bad in 3 weeks, they're really bad. But you're onto something. I know you're a big advocate of Stanley Cup playoffs, first playing, you know, the last team, at least in the East and the worst and the best in the West. I don't know if you can do it right across the NHL because of the time zones, but certainly with football you can. I mean, there's no reason. I was about to say it's pretty easy to travel back and forth across Canada because, you know, it's easy to fly around, but this week it doesn't seem very easy to fly around. But normally speaking, going from Toronto to Vancouver is not going to kill anybody. And it would take away probably from an extra couple of games against your closest rival and the expense of going to Toronto for a game versus an extra game in Vancouver would be, but it would perk up the credibility and it would probably give more meaning to playoff spots. I concur. It's time for one division in the CFL.
Because right now, Toronto plays tonight against Winnipeg. Let's say Toronto loses against Winnipeg, which I would kind of expect will probably happen. Winnipeg's still an excellent team. The East will be 2-12 this year. And Toronto will be in second place behind Montreal, still with 2 points. And yet, and I know that we've still got a lot of season and we can't extrapolate this yet, but that second place team, which is way behind the third and fourth place team in the West, would get a home game still. Like the whole thing just, there's ways to fix this. And again, I'm not rooting against the Ticats. That's not what it is. But I think that sometimes if there is a need to have to be better, sometimes you get better. And there's got to be some reason why it's always the East that gets crossed over. It's never the West that has the crossover against it. It's always the East. And maybe it's because you don't need to do anything different. You can get the game still. Maybe if there was a need to do it or you're out, things would be different. I don't know.
Well, there's the reason that happens is the Wests are always, always better. And have been. This isn't a new thing. The West
not
is
at
always
all.
Better. The interesting thing is the East generally have one pretty good team, which makes the Grey Cup a better Grey Cup. But if you were to, they were to flip to your format now and adopt that kind of a policy, there would be three teams in the East not make the playoffs. And if this present trend continues, that's exactly the way it should be. It's hard to gain credibility when you reward ineptness. And the CFL have got that down pat recently. So they need to add more credibility to their thing, make more games matter, make early games matter. I mean, I don't know if that's got something to do with the crowds. I mean, I did flip the game on the other night, and they're not selling out a smaller stadium. And I think if the games mattered and you had to be better, I think it creates better competition. And if your point is correct and it has merit that you have to be better because there's no easy way to get in, you're right. It'll be absurd that the East is 2-12 if the Argos lose tonight. I mean, that's crazy. And everybody is tied for first place except the last place team, who are 2 points out of first. Think about that.
Don, every year we hear the same thing. Well, you know, in the CFL, the season doesn't really begin till Labor Day. That is truly the worst marketing campaign in the history of marketing campaigns. In other words, if you're an idiot, you're buying a ticket to go to a game before Labor Day because really, it doesn't really matter. It's all an extended training camp and preseason because you can go 6-2 after Labor Day and you've got a home playoff date. Now, it's not exactly true, and I know that teams would blanch at that suggestion, but that idea that nothing matters till Labor Day is just a horrible idea for trying to sell this game, especially this time of year.
Senior, the Allan Cup Hockey League doesn't own brilliance by any stretch of the imagination when it comes to running a league. I always wanted to start later, and we would, years ago, would start in September, like junior hockey did. And we'd have board meetings and say, you know, nothing really gets going until November 1st. It took me almost 20 years, it took about 18 years. Our league now starts November 1st. If the real hockey starts November 1st, let's start November 1st. That's when people care. People are done golfing. There's more players. You know, the quality players aren't, you know, finishing up slow pitch and golfing and everything. Just start in November. So we practice a little bit. So we did it. I mean, You know, but their problem is they're trying to squeak more games in, and they only play one game a week. But you know what? With that league, play six games a month. Cut down on your practice time and just play six games a month. Then the owners wouldn't lose any home playoff dates. Might have a couple injuries more, but, I mean, practice less. Guys don't like practicing anyways. So play six games a month and start later. And they started in June.
Let me ask you this, Don. When, with the idea that I've proposed, and it'll never be done because traditionalists would scream bloody murder to get rid of the East and the West division in the CFL. But I really believe that, you know, once upon a time when the railroad and the CBC were the only two things that connected this country, East and West, there was some sort of geographic pride and it really mattered. And if you were, you know, a Hamilton fan and the Ticats didn't win, but Ottawa was in the Grey Cup, you'd cheer for them because they were part of the East. Today, I don't believe that that's the case one iota. This is now by the internet and everything else. It's a very small, big country. Do you honestly believe that if, for example, looking at the standings as they stand right now, if it was BC against Calgary or BC against Winnipeg in the Grey Cup or BC against Saskatchewan in the Grey Cup, would anybody in the East really say, well, come on, I can't watch that. There's no team from the East.
No, everybody would fill the tubs up with cold beer and have a barbecue and have a Grey Cup party. I mean, it can happen now. I mean, if there's a crossover, there's no guarantee there's a team in the East in it anyway. And to talk about your point about the East and the West, and, you know, I agree, other than it's a little tough to travel right now, but normally speaking, you can jump on a plane and in a timely fashion and head to Vancouver. But wasn't that long ago, Winnipeg were in the East. So they move the East-West border whenever they want to, whenever it suits them. Nobody ever thought Winnipeg was in the East, especially the people in Winnipeg. They didn't like it. I'm sure they didn't like it at all. And but I agree. I mean, make it all one league. It really doesn't matter. You know, if they had 14 teams or if they had 16 teams and they were kind of somewhat balanced, okay, well, then do it that way. But they don't. I mean, they've talked about a team in the East Coast, and I haven't heard any talk of that. You're in the business of reporting, but that, I don't know if that's dead or been slowed
up. Not dead,
COVID,
just but not dead, just sort of lying fallow right now. I don't think anyone really knows where that is. But anyway, I look at the Ticats right now, and I think they're going to get it figured out. I'm convinced they are. They're going to, now who knows if it'll be now or if it'll be in 2 or 3 weeks or whatever. They have a week off right now, but they could be 0-7, Don, and still get a home playoff gate because they will win a bunch of games in a row. And the way the East is, that'll put them into contention. And it seems to me that that is lunacy. That's just lunacy. It's lunacy that in a league you can be that bad and still have success. And I know people have said, look, 8 and 10 teams have been in the Grey Cup before. I get it. I understand what's happened in the past. I'm just saying, I don't think it's right that should be the case. I'd almost put a rule in saying, if you don't finish the year 500, no matter what our playoff situation is, we will restructure our playoff situation. You cannot qualify for the playoffs with a losing record. I would love that.
Well, there's going to be some separation in the East soon because they're going to just start playing each other and somebody sadly has to win the games.
Right. Right. Yep. No, you're right. And in the West, it'll be the same thing.
There's going to be separation.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Don, there has been endless chatter for the last number of days about the Toronto Raptors possibly making a huge trade like they did with Kawhi Leonard once upon a time and trying to bring in Kevin Durant and having one of the league's superstars in their roster again. And there's all kinds of debate about this. And I want to know whether it's Durant or whether it's just the concept. Durant is a guy who is very talented, but has a history and a reputation for being a bit of a one-man show, about being kind of the man who needs to be the guy, needs to be the center of attention, not happy a lot of the time, it seems. He's, you know, there are issues. Let's say this. There's drama when Kevin Durant is around. Do you make a trade for a guy like that if you're the Raptors, or do you say, you know, the risk is just, it could be great payoff, but the risk is just really high, and if this thing blows up, we're screwed?
I would defer to Mazzia Jury. because he will have done the research, because you asked me the question. So based on what I know about Durant, and it's not a giant leap to know I've never met the guy, but when you talk about all of the things he wanted Steve Nash to coach, he wanted trade for some players. He tried to run the Nets, barely playing for them. 1 year he didn't play at all after the Raptors series. And he likes to run the show. And probably a very generous way to say, I don't know if you want him around, is he's a distraction. He, from what I understand, is all the things you described him. So if you make a trade for him, and those things all come into effect, and he ends up only playing a year and a half, and you blow your franchise up for him, it's not good. And you won't be happy with the results. Now, if you bring him in, and he and Nick Nurse get along, and he'll buy into how Nick Nurse wants him to play, or Nick Nurse can live with how he wants to play and build the team around it, and sometimes that's what you have to do with these superstars, they could be in contention to win an NBA championship for four straight years. And I always go back to Sam Pollock, the famed GM of the Montreal Canadiens, when he said, the team that gets the best player wins the trade. Well, if you get him, you can give the whole team away and you win the trade. So
well,
he brings that to the table.
Don, your theory would be tested, though, because this is part of the question. You would be giving most of the team away. That's the problem to me with this one. With Kawhi Leonard, you had to give away DeMar DeRozan and another player or two and a draft pick or two. I can't remember, but it was a trade that you could stomach, that you weren't gutting the entire franchise. With this one, every single thing that has been talked about starts with Scottie Barnes, who's your great young upcoming player, and you know, there was another trade recently in the NBA where it was for 5 first-round picks, and you might have to give away OJ Anunoby, and suddenly you're getting Kevin Durant, but there's nobody left to play with him, and now all of a sudden you can just see what's going to happen. He's going to get here and be sour again because he's got nobody to play with. I look at this one, and I think unless the Nets really back off on what we're hearing they want, I just don't see how you do it and have a guy who's got the flair for the dramatic, and I don't say that in a positive way, not end up screwing this franchise up.
Well, the problem is, as a general manager, whenever you're making a deal, you need a backup plan. You may not always like your backup plan, but you need one. And if you're going to give away Barnes, who could be a key component of the Raptors for a decade, and you give up a bunch of futures, I don't care how good you are, you don't have a backup plan. If Durant goes south and plays a year and a half out of a 4-year contract, they may as well be in the D League, because they're going to have no drafts, no hope, and no expectation to win. And boy, that's giving away a lot. Although, Quebec did pretty good when they traded for Eric Lindros. It gave Colorado a Stanley Cup championship, and they gave up a lot. And it worked out well for both teams. So maybe you can do it, but basketball they don't have 25 guys. Like, they're going to thin roster. Only 5 play, and most of them play most of the game. So you're right, he's got to play with somebody. And how good is he? I mean, if the opposing teams only have to focus on him because there's like, Scott Radley's the second best shooter they've got, they're in big trouble.
I would say, if that's the case, I would say they're in big trouble no matter what the circumstance is. But you know, I mean, it's not even. And I know Kawhi Leonard came to the Raptors with all kinds of questions. He was moody, and he was seen as being a guy that you don't really know what you're getting. And he hadn't played for the Spurs when they brought him here. There were a lot of questions. You know, maybe we've heard before that Durant and Drake are really tight. I don't know if that's true. Maybe you bring him here and, you know, playing in front of Drake every night just inspires him. I don't know. I'm always leery of bringing guys in who have been dramatic in previous incarnations and previous stops. And, you know, he had everything going for him when he was in Oklahoma City. They could have, they were very close to winning, but they couldn't quite get over the hump. And so he says, let me out of here. And to me, that was a loser move. And then he jumps on board with Golden State to try and ride coattails to a championship. And then he goes to Brooklyn and tries to build a super team to build a championship. That to me doesn't strike me as the guy you build a team around as the guy to lead you. He seems like a guy who's always gone where the path is easier. And that's not the guy that I necessarily want. I want someone who's dying to lead a team to a championship, not just to be going along for the ride. And that's my perception of him.
The interesting thing is he's getting huge money for the next 4 years. It doesn't really matter where he plays. He should come in and do as he's told. I don't know if he has that in him. But, you know, kind of trust Toronto because they've already won a championship. They're capable of doing that. And if you could ever get him the mindset to just come in and be a piece of it and do your job and we'll win rather than we don't need you to run our franchise. We know how to do that. And I think he likes to do that based on what I'd said earlier, and you just kind of reiterated in a different way regarding building a superstar team, right? He thinks he can fashion himself as everything, coach, GM, right?
The guy, the guy.
He's got to step down. He's going to get, I don't know, $27 billion to play for the next 4 years. He doesn't need the money. And what motivates a guy like that if you're not a strong personality? Like, I think LeBron wants to win another championship because he has more money than a small nation. So he's playing for the right reasons. It's interesting that this guy does because the other thing he's done, Scott, is he tried to build that team, had a hand in trying to build that team in the Nets, brought in the coach he wanted. It didn't work for 15 minutes. He's going, all right, I'm done here. Where am I going now? Like, he wanted to be part of the architecture. Doesn't like what he built and he wants out. I don't know. I hope Toronto know a lot more about him than you and I do because just on the surface, it would seem like a pretty big gamble.
Agreed. But you know what? I'm with you. Masai Ujiri has proven himself. You got to say he knows what he's doing, but you know, because it worked once and Kawhi Leonard worked majestically well, because it worked once, you wonder if you say, well, you know, it can work a second time. And right here in Hamilton with Steve Staios, you know, Robert Thomas, back in 2018 when they won the Ontario Hockey League Championship, they went out and gave up a lot to get Robert Thomas, and he was everything they wanted, and he led them to the championship. And he did it again this time with Mason McTavish, and it did the same thing. Sometimes you can catch lightning in a bottle twice. Kevin Durant scares me as a guy that you build everything around. He just scares me because you look at him and you go, to me, I just don't see that that's the guy you want to put all your eggs in that basket, even though he's an amazing player.
Is part of it magical marketing, making the Raptors relevant again by being in the conversation all across North America, trying to put a package together, proving they'll do anything to win, and planning on coming up short anyway. Not a bad tactic if you're trying to become relevant again and saying, hey,
yeah,
they almost pulled out the biggest trade of the year. I mean, there's no downside for the Raptors to get into the conversation. Now, when it comes down to having to pull the trigger, they go, oh, boy, we better have another shot of cream soda here because I'm getting a little delirious and better relax. You know, I don't know. I mean, you might have second thoughts when it becomes real, but I think it's a great marketing move. It makes them relevant.
Maybe there's that.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Don, do you watch Wimbledon still? Did you ever watch Wimbledon?
Yeah, I've watched it. Better when there's Canadians in it, and I haven't watched a lot of it recently, but I certainly, when I do flip it on, I appreciate the athleticism and how good those guys are, and women, especially the women.
It is, I love it, but I don't watch it nearly as much, and I was thinking back when I was much younger, back when Borg and Connors and McEnroe and Nastasi and all those guys were playing, like, it seemed like you had to watch Wimbledon. And I don't know if we just get busy, or I don't know if the athletes are not as compelling, because certainly the tennis is better. The tennis is phenomenal, as you say. I wonder, do you think there's something to do with the fact that we don't know all the players like we once did that makes it less urgent to watch, or is it as urgent to watch?
Well, I think it's like everything else. There are so many other things you can do. I mean, my dad never missed a Kentucky Derby or a Preakness. Yeah, my dad never went to the racetrack, but they were big events. And Wimbledon has always been like that. So I don't know. I don't know if we've made so many other things big events that you can now pick and choose the big events you want to watch. I mean, LIV Golf, I flipped that on a little bit on Saturday just to see what it was like. They were pretty creative. So is that another option? Not really for me, but it's another option for some people. And, you know, the impact of large events gets diluted when there are so many large events now. The internet,
yeah, maybe that's
and,
it.
And TV have given us so many things to watch. I mean, back in that time frame you were talking about, the NBA wasn't a big deal.
Well, it was just starting. That was the very beginning. 79 was the beginning of the Bird Magic sort of renaissance of the NBA, but it's nothing like it was now. You're 100% right. I don't know. I was wondering as I would, you know, I was flipping around and I saw it, and I didn't stick with it. And I used to love tennis. I mean, I played all the time, loved it. And I just wonder how much of it was that we knew every one of those guys, or we had, like, you were a Borg guy, or you were a McEnroe guy, or you were a Connors guy back at the time. Like, you yeah. cared about one of those people and it mattered to you. Like, if you were a Borg guy, it mattered deeply to you that Bjorn Borg beat Jimmy Connors or John McEnroe in the final. It mattered deeply to you. Now, I don't know, maybe it still does. Do you still care deeply that Federer beats Nadal or Nadal beats Federer or someone else? Does it have the same meaning? I don't know.
Well, it's a sports show, so I'm going to use this analogy. Is the best comparison or a similar comparison boxing when Muhammad Ali
yes.
was around
yes.
and maybe Mike Tyson? I mean, there used to be 35 world championships, but seemingly Ali owned the big one and they were all amalgamated. They all wanted to be part of that fight. And I couldn't tell you now for the life of me who the world heavyweight champion is.
I think it's a great example. I think people care deeply about who won back then. I really do. I think they cared a lot. And, you know, that to me, the tennis has never been better. The athletes are better than they've ever been. The one thing that maybe other people disagree, but the one thing I think is missing is that connection, that deep connection with the athletes. And maybe it's for the exact reason you just said. There's so many other things going on that we just can't dive into it like that. Or maybe it's because the flip side, who's a villain in tennis right now? There isn't one. I mean, back once upon a time, Connors was sort of a villain. He sort of vacillated. McEnroe was clearly a villain and Borg was the good guy. And you could take sides and it was pretty clear what you, now they're kind of all interchangeable in a lot of ways. That's probably unfair, but that's kind of how it seems, that everybody's just a benign, friendly, good guy.
Well, it's harder to get in arguments with some of the line calls because they're done computerized now. So
that too.
You look like a fool yelling and screaming at a computer. but I think tennis, along with almost probably every other sport, except maybe horse racing, the athletes are so much better. Nutrition, training. Like, you can make an argument that this year's edition of the Toronto Maple Leafs couldn't win a Stanley Cup, but for sure the 1967 team wouldn't make the playoffs. You know, and the changes in hockey and baseball, basketball are just been phenomenal. And we get to see wonderful athletes like we've never seen before. I mean, look at golf. These guys hit the ball 340 yards. Jack Nicklaus used to hit his second shot 340 yards. You know, it's crazy, the technology and the ability that they've got and the training. The whole level of athleticism and pro sports and amateur sports has gone up so much. So it's harder to be relevant, whether it's Wimbledon or whatever the sport.
Yeah, it's a great point. I'm not sure that with all the improvements, I'm not sure that it's become always more compelling, because the human part of it, to me, is still the most compelling part. And your boxing example is a great one. And I'll tell you, one of the reasons why the UFC caught on 10 or 15 years ago was because they started a TV show called The Ultimate Fighter. And it was one of those shows where you saw the guys living together and training, and you got to know who they were. And I think that's something that a lot of sports have missed out on, is the idea of, let's make sure you have a human connection to somebody and you really care about somebody. Because I think that's what makes the difference. I think that's why you're fans of certain teams. We see the coverage, we learn about the players. It matters to us, those players. I think that's missing in tennis right now. Be a smart thing in my mind for somehow tennis to figure out how to do more of that, so you cared more about the individual athletes, whoever it is. Anyway.
Yeah, I agree.
Don Robertson, thank you. As always, always appreciate you doing this. Thanks for this. Go back and enjoy the nice heat on the back 40.
I'm there, and I want to take 2 seconds and give a great shout-out to Michael Andelar, Steve Steos, and the Real McCoy's friend, Jay McKee, for having such a successful season. You never know when you get another crack at this stuff, and they were close, and we'll have a talk someday about hosts not playing versus the battled-up team, but boy, hats off to those guys, and I hope everybody goes out and buys a season ticket for them. They were great. Thank you.
Thanks, Don.
The Scott Radley Show. Weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode. And also, be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.
I'm not just a pawn in this game.
3 nights a week on Global.
They're putting targets on their back. Massive.
Drama.
I guess you could say I'm in a showman.
They're just so in love and so annoying. Enough.
Betrayal.
The guy just put up his best friend now.
And plot twists.
What is happening right now?
You'll never see coming.
If you're coming for me,
this is perfect.
I'm coming for you then.
It'll be a battle.
Like, it'll be war.
Big Brother Canada. All new Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Sundays on Global. Stream on Stack TV.